Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women's Influence. I'm Knight Campbell, your host for The Leading Edge, Women Pushing Boundaries in Life, Adventure, and Leadership. Our topic today is Women, Leadership, and Climbing Your Mountains with Angela Haas. Angela is a true alpinist. She is the president of the American Mountain Guide Association, and she's the sixth out of only 11 women who have reached the IFMGA Mountain Guide certification level, which is incredibly impressive, especially considering there are only 138 IFMGA guides in the U.S. These are people who are certified to guide pretty much anywhere, anytime in the world in the mountains. So good morning, Angela. Welcome.
Good morning, Knight. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited.
So excited to have you on. I am an SBI, which is the first baby step in the guiding industry, and the opportunity to hear your insights as a very experienced guide and leader in the guiding community and also leading on expeditions is just very exciting to me. I'm curious, what should our listeners know about you as we get rolling here?
Oh, well, that's a big question to unpack, but I guess you should know is I'm very adventurous. I like to dive into the unknown, and I don't consider myself a risk taker, although I think a lot of people on the outside would look at my career and what I do for fun as fairly risky. And no doubt it is, but I think that I look at myself more as a problem solver and that I thrive in environments where decision-making has, like, real consequences and using my skills to overcome adversity while managing risk is just something that I really love to do. And it's something I've done for well over 30 years, and I think one of the reasons I love my work like this is it's always dynamic. It's never the same. I could climb the same mountain all summer, and it would never be the same twice. The people would not be the same, the mountain, the weather, the conditions, everything. So I love that I can look at things on a fresh palette every day and use my skills and my drive and my love for sharing my passion with the outdoors and getting to places where people never thought they'd ever get to enables them to just be empowered, and it empowers me, and I just love that. And ultimately, I'm a total nature lover. I just have found that I have to spend time outside to thrive, and I love people. So it's been a really good fit. My career as a mountain guide, and I'm really grateful that I've found that passion early on in life and been able to pursue it.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there, but I love that idea of not being a risk taker despite ice climbing and mountaineering and rock climbing, but just solving the problem. It's not something that's impossible. It's just a challenge to solve. What was the road like for you from, you know, being an outdoor enthusiast, basically, to being one of the most preeminent mountain guides in the U.S. or in the world?
It was an adventure, for sure. I went to a small liberal arts college in Arizona called Prescott College that had an outdoor program, and I was adventurous as a kid, for sure, climbing trees. I grew up in rural West Virginia and just really was always outside. And then I found my place at Prescott College. I had an outdoor program, and it really, for me, the journey was finding mentors that really inspired me, that one, their happiness level was amazing, something I'd never experienced before. People who just were so keen and enthusiastic about sharing what they knew about the outdoors and facilitating experiences that, you know, we were all learning and growing together. And it wasn't like they were, you know, projecting like these charisma of the classic leader, you think, but they were more facilitating a group experience that enabled us to thrive in our environment, but also just learn how to, you know, have good life skills as communicators and team players and leaders ourselves. And so that journey for me started at that college, the real kind of like kind of outdoorsy journey and technical journey. And I love the school's motto is education is a journey, not a destination. And that's kind of something that I think is characteristic of my whole career. And I've had a lot of, I guess you could consider my goals as destinations, but, you know, really it's just the learning along the way that's really been invaluable. And you know, for me to get to the place I have in my career where I'm one of very few women in the world that as licensed as an international IFMGA guide, and only 12 in the United States, 12 women in the United States have earned this credential. Mm-hmm. There was certainly a lot of self-discovery and learning how to push my preconceived limits that I'd placed on myself, and just really, there's a lot of suffering, no doubt. You know, I slept in the back of my truck for years to be able to afford the programs and, you know, just to put myself in places where I could have big adventures to, you know, really provide me with a personal foundation that would provide me with a good solid base of skills to, you know, have the ability to lead others in the mountains. And that was certainly the real formative years for me, was out there on my own, you know, without much mentorship and just figuring it out with another partner and, you know, making the best of it and learning from our mistakes and, you know, just really building that foundation of skills along the way. And I think also for me, one of the big things as a woman going through this in a journey in a male-dominated profession is just learning that how much importance we place on our just the visual appearance of people, and that, like, I don't see myself as a small little woman, but I'm only like 5'5", and for me that's never been kind of my defining limits, and I think I've always just been able to think big and that not be limited by what others expect of me, and just being able to go for it and know what I can do and know that I can. I think all the experiences I've had, it's taught me, like, I really don't even know what my limits are, and to just keep pushing them and listen to my body. And, you know, my body will know when it's okay to push and when it's not. And I think learning to trust my intuition there has been a big part of this whole process.
Well, yeah, you mentioned pushing your preconceived limits. I think that's society's put a lot of limits on women in particular. What was that process like for you? Is there advice that you could give listeners who might be struggling with the same thing?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think it's just, it has to come from within, and it's how you see yourself. And I've always been a fairly confident person, and I think that's helped me overcome you know, barriers that other people would have possibly placed on me because I am small. And I think it's just a matter of, like, connecting with that place in us that's not a physical thing, and, like, knowing that there's, like, this source of power that we can dive and tap into that's available to us if we kind of are able to break down what I would consider like our ego barrier, that's like all about the way that we're seen, who we are, what we've done, how much is importance we place on all of that, where it's more like there's this infinite source in all of us, I believe, in that enables us to tap into that deep power that we can, you know, once you start exploring that and you believe in it, I feel like it really opens you up to the possibilities that we, our ego places on the limitations that our ego places on us.
That's so interesting. So the guiding industry is still, I think, very bro-y. A lot of young white men like myself who act in a certain way, and certainly the resume and all of that really matters. So how, like, when someone judges you by your appearance, by your physical size, by your resume, how do you get back to that infinite source of power, which I love that image?
Well, I think inherently we all have biases that, you know, the way we look at things are shaped by our experiences, and I think a lot of people just aren't even aware of those. Fortunately, we're starting to learn more and more about that, and that's becoming more common knowledge. But I think it's really, it's that projection that we place, and that our confidence in any situation, like when I go up, for example, if I have some clients that are, you know, older, white, successful men, and my job is to take them out for a multi-pitch climb that day, you know, I just kind of expect they're going to be discerning. When I walk up to them, I'm like, you know, a foot shorter than they are. I'm a slight gal, and I think it's the confidence that I project on that initial meeting that puts them at ease, and it helps them see beyond, like, who I am physically. It's like, oh, yeah, this woman knows her stuff. She's just clearly outlined what we're going to do, who's in charge, what our roles are, what the expectations of us are, what we can expect of her, and clearly she's in her element. And I think it's really that confidence that we can project into any situation commands people's respect, whereas if we come into a situation, and I've certainly had off days where, you know, I'm more off my game and I haven't projected that confidence, and people pick up on it. You know, it's like how you carry yourself, and it's your confidence in your humanness as well as your skills. And I think that really, really does help. But it's, you know, it is difficult getting into this profession, I think, as a woman, because you don't have a lot of other women role models, and that's something that's lacking in our industry. And fortunately, we've had a big push in the outdoor industry to support more women with scholarships getting into the program, and now more diversity in terms of BIPOC getting into our programs. And that certainly, we're seeing how that improves our profession. There's a lot of clients out there who actually prefer climbing with women for all the things, the differences that we bring to a day than a guy might not.
That's great. Yeah. That brings me to another question I have for you. Do women have inherent strengths in general? Of course, it's different from person to person, but in leadership as a guide, you know, I think there's a different experience having a woman as a guide. Do women bring different strengths to the table?
Definitely. I think that we just have a different approach to the experience often than guys do. And, you know, I'm of the thought that, you know, we all have male and female sides to us. So, you know, some of us are more feminine, some of us are more masculine. But I think the qualities that are more feminine that women bring to an experience and certainly leadership are empathy. I see a lot more of that in women, where they can kind of relate to more the beginner and provide a supportive atmosphere that feels maybe it's easier to have trust to push oneself when your leader is more empathetic, that you're, you know, just learning all this, and learning is hard, and there's a lot of apprehension and a lot of things that are intimidating about, you know, certainly my environment where I'm taking beginners, is vertical environments where now they're on a rope and, you know, there's a lot of exposure. So I think that empathy, and I think also women are very good listeners and can tune in to not only just hearing what's being said, but more checking in with that more like subtle emotional keys that are going on for folks. And again, I hate to just put us in pigeonholes, men and women, but I do feel like women bring, in terms of leadership, these types of things that are more common in women than men. And then I also think that women are very good team players and very good at delegating and directing people to have jobs and be more participate in the experience rather than being a follower. And I think that that really can help empower people in their journey of discovery in the outdoors, because in general, people in the United States like to engage and participate. And it's not so much the same in Europe, at least that's not the tradition, where you're kind of like a team when you're going out on an expedition, or you're a team when you're climbing the mountain. And I think women can really kind of help facilitate an experience like that. And then I think because oftentimes we are smaller and perhaps visually we don't seem quite as strong as our male counterparts, which we're not, gives people confidence in their ability, because they're like, well, if she can do it, I can probably do it. And I think that we can really inspire people with more fluidity in our movement and just these more feminine sides of things that make my world and the vertical environment much more approachable.
That's great. Yeah, I just happened into some women-specific climbing courses working for REI, and women always come, in my experience, thinking they can't climb because they're not strong. And it's this magical experience of, you know, well, use your feet and your balance and think things through, all things men are terrible at, and you're actually much better at climbing than I am.
Exactly. Exactly. There's so much more than the physical aspects of it. And then, you know, when you really get the mechanics of it, you realize that the physical aspects are really not that hard because you're using your legs more than your arms.
Right, right. Do you have the guiding industry? I can't imagine coming up through the ranks, particularly in the time that you did. I think things are getting better and still need a lot of improvement. But there's a lot of bias there for sure from clients, probably from other guides. Do you have advice for women listening who might be in other male-dominated fields to pass that bias, to confront it? I don't know. What would you say?
Yeah. Well, bias training is remarkable, and we've invested in a lot of that with our instructor team at the American Mountain Guides Association, and we're, you know, starting to educate our membership in, you know, the different types of biases that we're really unconscious to. And that, I think that alone is helping tremendously, that we're just raising awareness to these things that are pretty subtle but very impactful. And, you know, I think for women it's important to have allies and others that are helping to keep the biases in check, that are, you know, learning and like watching for it, because I've always found that when we as women point things out, it can come across as harsh, or we're labeled as bitchy, whereas if we have an ally that observes the behavior that's not appropriate, that can point that behavior out so we don't have to, then I think that just sends us forward leaps and bounds in the right direction. And you know, that's what we really all have to do with all the waking up with the social injustices that are confronting us right now is to just really be allies for each other and recognize that and not be not sit back. We have to speak up.
Yeah, that's such a good point. If you walk into a room of 10 men that you maybe don't know that well, how do you know who might be a good ally and who might not?
Well, I don't know. I think you kind of have that intuition. You kind of scan the room, and it's for me, it's more of a sense of how they're carrying themselves and how they're projecting themselves, and really, are they listening? You know, and I think it's really, for me, pretty obvious who the listeners in the room are and who the ones that are more like absorbed with themselves and are thinking about what they're going to say. And you know, those folks that are engaged in active listening, they're like have eye contact on the person that's talking, and they're, you know, when someone else speaks up, they respond by summarizing someone else's points before sharing their opinions and those types of things. I think it might be difficult to set up an ally experience in a room if you don't have a chance to talk to someone first, but certainly if you don't, you could kind of, you know, just make eye contact with that person and send them that vibe that, hey, we're in it together and I'm here to support you and you're here to support me.
Yeah. When a woman finds an ally, what are some things you would recommend asking for? Like how could you ask an ally for support in very tactical ways?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, I think it's just talking with the ally about some of the experiences that I've had that have been kind of hurtful or impactful for me, such as I think one that's come up that a lot of men are unconscious of is like when they're, say, in a smaller group, maybe even 10, I don't know, but which I'm thinking more like 4 or 5 guys and me, when they're talking amongst themselves, oftentimes I'm not included in the eye contact or the questioning, and it's almost like I'm not present, and it's a very awkward situation. And when I point that out to them, they're like, oh, you're right. They weren't even aware of it. So I think for each female, it's going to be a little bit different how they felt excluded from conversations. And just with your ally saying, hey, these are things, it would really help support me if you see this type of behavior, because I've like recognized that as a pattern. And if you see that, if you can kind of speak up for me and maybe just kind of interject and, you know, ask a question rather than, you know, we don't want to like just call people out. We want to call them in and ask a question like, hey, what were you meaning? Like, what was your intention when you said that? You know, drawing instead of like putting people on the spot, really trying to like call them in and, you know, help clarify, because maybe there's misunderstanding. But I think it's really those allies that are in it to help us, and you know, we can point to like educational materials on biases that they might be interested to read, because you know they're probably really keen to help make the world a better place and doing their part. If we can give them some of the tools that'll help do that in our little world, I think that makes a huge difference.
That's so helpful to have that, exactly what you can say. And yes, I think when you find the right people with less ego, at least, we as men can quite appreciate you pointing that out so that we can also point it out.
Totally.
And notice it, because often we're just blind to it.
That's right.
Unfortunately.
And I think oftentimes we can get very rather than, you know, I think sometimes it comes across for us as women as intentional, whereas it isn't at all. Maybe some of it is, but I think a lot of it isn't.
Yeah, that's really useful. I'm going to keep my eyes open for that now myself.
Awesome.
Switching gears a little bit, you know, you've led some really big expeditions on some of the world's largest mountains, bad weather, and in stressful, high-stakes situations. So there's a lot of leadership there. What are some key, I guess, takeaways or words of wisdom that you would share with listeners about leadership?
Great question. There are so many parallels with climbing a mountain with leadership. I think ultimately the most important thing is coming back home safely, and that's a metaphor for anything. And it's not, the mountain will always be there, and it might not be the time to get to stand on the summit, but it's the decisions we make along the way and the way that we can read the environment and our people, and that we can know when we're ready to go and when we need to pull back, that really makes a successful expedition. And with a lot of these big mountains like Everest and other, you know, these Himalayan giants, it's a team process getting to the top of any mountain. And it really draws on the resources of everybody and the ability as a leader to know your team and know what their individual skill sets are, and to really try to empower them, engage them when the time's right, that they can really kind of help the team with what they bring to the table, is something that's extremely important. And it's really, you know, even though you may have or I might have the final say as the leader as to when we're going to go and when we're not going to go and why, I always want to bring the team into the discussion, because there's probably things in the decision-making process that I might miss. And I recognize that the greater whole collective knowledge of the team is much greater than my narrower limited view. No matter how much experience I have, there's always going to be something that someone that I can bring out of someone to make our decision better.
Right. And that goes back to some of those strengths of a more, say, feminine approach of leadership that you talked about earlier, in building trust and listening and having empathy. That's important for any leader. Angela's time is going so fast, as it always does. We need to talk about making these interviews longer. But I'm curious, you know, for listeners, if they want to get in touch with you, they want to go climb a mountain or get some more wisdom, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I have a very out-of-date website. People can always find me there. My email address is there. It's alpinist007@mac.com. But my full name, angelahoff@.com, is where you could find me. And I'm on Instagram a little bit as alpinist007. I'm not very active social media, so my email is probably the best way to reach out.
Okay, great, thank you. And I always like to wrap up, is there one piece of advice that you would give women in leadership roles anywhere to help them move forward?
Yeah, I think it's really just be authentic and know that you're there for a reason, because you've put the time and the work in to be in a leadership role, and just be absolutely 100% confident in your ability to do that, because you're there because you were meant to be, and places wherever you are is going to be better having you there.
That's awesome. Be authentic. Thank you so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate all of your insights and sharing your experience. And, hopefully I'll run into you in the mountains sometime as the world gets to be a safer place to be.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for inviting me on tonight. It's been a great interview, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you, Angela. You all, that is all for our show today. Thank you, Angela, for being our leader today, and special thanks to all our listeners around the world. We'll be back again for another Women Lead Radio show on Mondays at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. It has been my sincere pleasure to be your host today. Thank you for listening. Keep exploring, pushing boundaries, and leading on the edge.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.